welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Kate Montana, who is the author of The E-Word, Ego, Enlightenment, and Other Essentials. As many people on the spiritual path have found, the journey is not always without bumps and deviations from the path. And as you get more experience with meditation, you do find that things really evolve in a certain way so that you can develop, a conversation with the universe and eventually understand that your ego or your separate identity self is not who you really are. Kate's written a wonderful book on her journey, and one that's filled with humor and a lot of great insights on how you can maybe not verge off on some of these paths for too long and get back on the main path of spiritual enlightenment. Thanks, Kate, for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Susan.
So, would you like to tell the listening audience a little bit about your background and how you came to write the book?
Okay, well, that's about a 60-year story, but I can make it brief. When I was 30 years old, I kind of hit the wall and realized that society's happiness formula wasn't working for me, as probably just about everybody, yourself included, on the spiritual path has experienced. Focusing on money and a great career and a great love life. I mean, those are all wonderful things, but they can only take us so far. And I did everything right, and I had a great career and a great husband and a great education. And at 30, I discovered that I was still desperately lost, afraid, insecure, filled with doubt and confusion, and I had no understanding about who I was or what life was about. So I took the only other path, which was inwards. And I rapidly discovered on the spiritual path that the not even the brass ring, the gold ring, the gold standard, the ultimate achievement was attaining enlightenment. And since I'd been raised as a 21st century woman, I was 20th century woman, I was very much a lean-in type A personality, and so I was like, oh, sure, that's it. I'm going to become enlightened. That's the answer to all of my confusion and my pain and suffering. So I went after it, and I ended up quitting my job in network television. I was working for all of the networks in doing sports as an editor and traveling all over the world and making a lot of money and really thought I was it. My ego thought it was it. And I quit that. I actually left my husband. I went and lived in a one-room cabin with no indoor plumbing or electricity up in the mountains of North Georgia for 3 years, and then another similar cabin in the mountains in Washington State with the sole intent of just meditating my tail end off, which is what I did. And to make a long story short, for about 15 years, I just centered my whole life around my spiritual pursuits, my inner work, my meditation. And I never had a formal training. I didn't learn TM. I didn't have any understanding really of what meditation was aside from an inward turning gaze. And I only asked really one question consistently over the years, and that is, who am I? And after about 20,000 hours of meditation and 15 years later of really heavy meditation and inward searching, I finally was just plain exhausted. I just couldn't lean in any further. I couldn't strive anymore. I couldn't read one more spiritual book. And I was just like, oh my God, I didn't know what to do, Susan. And I remember coming downstairs, and this was in the spring of 1997, and looking at my meditation pillow at 4 o'clock in the morning, which I usually meditated for 4 or 5 hours before I started work. And it was just like, to hell with it. I just plopped down on that cushion and I just gave up. I was so tired of running after answers and happiness and enlightenment. And of course, as it so often happens, in that moment of absolute exhaustion and surrender, Kate Montana actually dissolved. And for a timeless time, I was just, I am what I am, just consciousness, presence, existence. And yes, it was blissful in the extreme, incredibly peaceful. It was so obvious that everything is one thing and that Kate Montana fundamentally was an illusion. And just like all of the spiritual teachers have been saying for so many thousands of years. And when I opened my eyes and I, Kate Montana, came back, it was the biggest cosmic joke in the world. It was like, oh my God. In that moment, I realized that I could never become enlightened because enlightenment is the absence of me. There wasn't anybody left to be appreciative of being liberated. Mm-hmm. Bliss happened without me. And so that started the next leg of my journey, which, let me see, from 1997 to, well, basically 18 years until I started writing the E-word in December of 2014. Spirit basically sat me down and said, you will write what you know about the mm-hmm. ego and enlightenment. And that was what I had discovered in that intervening 15 years. I just kept bouncing back and forth between that non-dual state of unity consciousness in meditation. And then it started happening when I wasn't even in meditation. Kate would just, the dualistic separate viewpoint would just fall away. And I was just left, I am, and raging, wonderful, glorious existence. And then Kate Montana, the mindset, the neurological network that fires in the brain called Kate Montana would come back and I'd be left with me again. And me was ongoingly crippled and unhappy and confused. So it took me another 15 years to finally realize that there was a middle ground between the ego, the sense of the separate self, and the mindset that the limited mindset that gives us. And non-dual, non-egoic consciousness called enlightenment. And so that's why I ended up writing the book, because I was so excited, Susan. There actually is a middle ground where I can be liberated from the suffering and the illusions of the ego, and yet still be around on this planet Earth to enjoy the understanding of who I really am. And that's ultimately liberation that we can all enjoy. And so in December 2014, I sat down to write the E-word, and it quickly found a publisher. And now 2 years later, here we are.
So in your book, you make a point, which I think is really worth making, that many people who become enlightened don't actually stay on the planet. They actually dissolve into spirit. Probably consciously, but certainly don't come back into the body.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very good point. I interviewed a woman recently on a channeling from Jesus, and Jesus had a very interesting experience in India. I don't know if you know Tricia McCannon. She's a friend of mine who wrote a book on Jesus, too, and hers is more historical, but this book that I interviewed the author on was a channeling, and it was information that Jesus gave. And Jesus actually went to India and did all sorts of very advanced spiritual work in the mystery schools and then ascended. And then it was unusual, but he came back. You know, he actually had a conversation with the Creator, which was a she in the channeling, which was interesting. But decided to come back because his mission was laid out before him, and he wanted to actually complete the mission that he had created to in that lifetime. And then, you know, later on, after the the ascension, he is still on an ascended plane in probably where we're going after the ascension at that level. He's still there in a body. You know, he's got a body that he says he does, is basically at a higher level of vibration, but nonetheless a body. And so I really identified with what you said, because it was a big deal for him to come back and complete his mission. He said most people who ascend don't come back.
That's correct. I learned that from my guru, Sadh Guru, from Coimbatore, India. I'd never really thought about it much because I'd been, like so many people, exposed to so much New Age thought about, well, you become enlightened, and then you live happily ever after as a teacher, you know, and you hang around and wear white robes and do whatever ascended masters are supposed to do. And I was completely flummoxed back in 1997, the first time that I fell into non-dual awareness. And you see, that's even inaccurate saying that right now. I didn't fall into it. I went away, and what was left was everything, with no moniker, no name attached to it. And going back and forth between the state of unity consciousness and dual consciousness was so confusing because I didn't understand why my personality just didn't stay away. And it turned me off.
Well, I think your personality is like a suit of clothing you put on, and it's functional.
Absolutely. You
know, it's actually very functional, you know. I don't think I'd be allowed to go into surgery if I didn't have that suit on with the credentials, okay? I think I'd get in trouble.
You are so right, Susan. And it took me a long time. I was so, you know, bent. My mind was so bent on this enlightenment path, like this all or nothing gig, and that I didn't realize the value of the ego. I was still too busy trying to get out of it, trying to crush it, resolve it, get rid of it. And it took me, a decade and a half to realize that it is a very useful tool. We really cannot function as human beings very well on this planet without it. It's the way we differentiate ourselves from the rest of the quantum sea. And you know, if I was total undifferentiated with no structure, I wouldn't be able to tell myself from the bus coming down the road at me. You know what I mean? And so it took a long time for me to educate myself and figure out what the heck was going on and get the utility of the ego, get that the ego can actually be expanded, that it's not supposed to be destroyed. You can't destroy it. You cannot destroy yourself while you're yourself. It is just a natural progression that happens. And there is no control over it. And the more I tried to control it and make it happen, the further I pushed it away, because striving and seeking only solidifies the isolated persona doing the seeking and the struggling to get out of itself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, allowing is very, very important, the allowing of the natural unfolding of things.
Totally. Totally. So when I heard Sadhguru say that most entities who do become enlightened leave the body, if they maintain the enlightened perspective, and again, language is so misleading. They don't maintain anything. They aren't there.
Right.
There's nothing maintaining anything. There's just life. And
but there's nothing holding them here either. I think that's really what it is.
That's exactly what it is. There's no attachment to the body. Everything is seen as fundamentally everything is an illusion. Mm-hmm. Not in the sense that it doesn't exist, but that it's physical and that one thing is separate from any other thing. That's the illusion. So, there's nothing to hook you to stay here.
I wanted to share something with you that happened to me in the 90s. In the 90s, one of my spiritual students was bringing masters in every month or so from all over the world to teach here in Atlanta. And she would tag me to go out to dinner with them, you know, when they first came in because, you know, we could, you know, talk about different things. And it was just interesting. I met masters from all over the world. And I learned something very important that I think you'll appreciate. The different masters did have different personalities, but at a master level, and some of these people were incredibly the energy coming out of them was just amazing. And their eyes were all the same. I mean, when you looked into their eyes, you really saw beyond any personality. The energy behind the eyes was just incredible. But they did have different personalities, and some of them would, you know, very humorous, and others very serious, and others very, very wise. But it really showed me, though, that they were all enlightened because of the energy that surrounded them and specifically came out of their eyes.
And they were all operating from the understanding that they knew doggone well, but they weren't their name, their body, their personality, their history, their message, anything. And which is why I swear why the Buddha smiles is because the joke is so cosmic that that there is no personal structure left. There is nobody home to be liberated after the dust settles. So it's very funny.
But
yeah,
you know,
personality,
but,
as you say,
but
is
seeing that
important.
You really do understand that the energy behind all of these masters is the same energy.
Uh-huh.
It's the same energy behind any enlightened being. It really is.
It's the same energy. It's the energy of life itself. It's not just of the enlightened being. It's the energy that holds your TV together and your car motor and your cat and you.
That's right.
It's all one thing. which is an extraordinary viewpoint to finally come to after. Because our bodies teach us. I mean, I talk about it in the book, where the ego comes from. Because I trying to explain all of this to myself and to piece this whole puzzle together of how this works was extraordinary. And I realized that the way the ego starts is when we first come into our baby bodies. And it's because we're thrown into this incredibly sensory-based world where there's like 11 million bits of sensory data coming into our eyes and ears and nose and skin and tongue and mouth, and we're just like, there's just this tsunami of information that tells us a couple of things. The first message is, I am physical. And it's unconscious, of course. This is all pre-verbal. The baby isn't lying there going, oh, my God, this is so overwhelmingly physical. But that's the message. And the second message, which is where all of the trouble really comes from. The second message our senses give us is, I am separate. The baby doesn't notice, not a conscious thing. But the baby can't help but find out that mommy and daddy are outside. You know, the breast and the milk and the bottle, my binky, my blanket, my teddy bear, they're not part of me. My body, you know, I've got a skin boundary. And this unconscious awareness that we are separate doesn't become solidified until we start getting language. At around 12 months of age, somewhere in there, your brain, you know, responded to your mom and dad going, Susan, Susan, oh, Susan. And your little brain, if you'd had language, would have gone click. Oh, my God, I think my name is Susan. But since you didn't have language, all there was a neurological hookup that all of a sudden hooked the sound, Susan, to your little baby unconscious awareness of a skin boundary and you being an isolated little human unit. And once that connection was made, then the rest of language, pronouns, you know, your mom and dad probably sat around and you know, taught you teaching games like, you know, I'm mommy and you're Susan and me and you and us and them. And so we learn the language of separation. And we learn then, you learned your gender and you learned what color your skin was and what your ethnic persuasion was and what your religion was. And then the story of the ego gets hung on that coat hanger, that original sound of your name, attached to that pre-verbal awareness of I am separate. You know, if you were sitting here in the room with me right now and you and I were looking at each other, it would seem like, you know, you're really over there. You're really in Atlanta and I'm really out here in the Pacific Northwest. And that there's nothing connecting us. But that's the lie that our senses tell us. And then we end up, as a result of that misperception, we end up with misidentification. We think we are Susan, and we are human, and we are separate. And that's where all of our fear and vulnerability comes from, is that bottom line, grounded, unconscious belief that we are separate from the rest of the world.
And we have to compare that to what we are in spirit. We've been educated recently, and it's a very interesting education, that when we're in spirit, we can do an infinite number of things simultaneously. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
How unbounded we are in spirit compared to how bound we are when we're in the body. I think it's a fascinating contrast.
It's extraordinary. And, you know, and what's really extraordinary is that we're really not bound in the body. That's the impression the body senses give us. But if you're familiar with quantum physics at all, there is no such thing as a physical particle. We use the word particle, you know, when we're talking about electrons and protons and muons and quarks. But and using the, and of course we use the language of physicality because that's what we think we are. Our bodies train us to think in terms of physicality. So even the word particle, doesn't it remind you of like a little tiny grain of sand or something that, like, the foundation of matter?
Right.
Well, yeah. Well, that's what scientists went after over 100 years ago. They wanted Newtonian physicists wanted to know what the smallest building block of matter was so they could kind of just understand matter. And the more they investigated, and then they built bigger microscopes, and then eventually they built electron microscopes and started smashing atoms. And there is no foundational little brick and mortar particle of matter. It's all.
Now you have superstring theory, which is basically matter is nothing but superstrings of energy.
Well, yeah, and even using the word strings, you know, strings, particles, those are physical things that we can conjure, you know, we can imagine a string that's separate from other strings. But the truth of the matter is the quantum sea is boundaryless. There are no borders to anything. Everything is one thing. Energy, information, space-time. And the consequences of that are enormous if we can start to wrap our minds around it and see that it's actually important to start to think in those unified terms. You know, I talked about in the book to be able to expand the ego from that little baby, unconscious, programmed, I am physical, I am separate, therefore I'm vulnerable and scared place. The way that we can become these outrageous, much more unlimited beings, human beings, is by training our minds to think in these less concrete terms and begin to rework how we perceive the world and in more mystical terms, if you will, or scientific terms, if you want to look at thinking in terms of quantum physics and the quantum sea, and we are all just energy information. And that's the big step. That's why one of the other reasons I wrote the book, The E-Word, is because I wanted to give people tools, meditations, practices that they could use to actually start to change their minds, expand their minds from the limited, I am physical, I am separate and vulnerable mindset of the ego, and expand it into what I didn't even know when I was writing the book until I got into it, and then it hit me like a ton of bricks. I kind of like went back to my psychology roots when I got my master's degree in psychology, and I remembered there's such a thing in ego evolution called the transpersonal state. And that's the psychological state that people like Dr. Abraham Maslow talked about, where we finally grow up enough and we learn more empathy and connection until we finally start to include others and life itself in our definition of self. We begin to develop empathy and compassion. We realize that, you know, as what happens to me, I bleed the same way, I suffer the same way you do, just, you know, maybe for different reasons, but the suffering is the same. And the more we can become attuned to our sameness, then the more elegant and expanded and less isolated our world becomes. more it becomes quantum, the more mystical it becomes. But truth be told, we're just actually awakening to the deeper reality rather than just skating on the surface.
Yeah, I think we're on the edge of an amazing expansion, which will involve disclosure and energetic revolutions in energy and in medicine, medical breakthroughs, and even understanding that we probably for years through the Secret Space Program and other projects have vast technologies that we didn't even know existed, including time travel, cloning, and incredible technologies that I think are going to be brought to the forefront if we're lucky, if things can change, can shift toward that disclosure. And
yeah,
with that, I think we're going to have just an amazing revolution in consciousness expansion. The mass consciousness has to be ready for it, though.
Absolutely.
We have to drop the fear that extraterrestrials are just here to eat us and conquer the earth and take us over, you know.
Right.
There's a lot of fear that we have to get through. But I think there was an announcement just yesterday that there are, I don't know how many planets identified that probably have life on them. And this is what you'll see. You'll see a bunch of sudden scientific discoveries, which actually aren't sudden at all. They're just ramping us up for disclosure and these other things. But I think we're just on the verge of something very, very exciting.
Absolutely, absolutely. And at the same time, and I can't help but believe this is why Spirit pressed me so hard to bring this book into existence, is because if we vault into these, I mean, we're already at a place technologically where we can destroy ourselves a billion times over, whether it's with biotechnology or whether it was nanotechnology or whether it was with nuclear
technology. Fukushima, you know.
Oh, God.
I mean, there's a big threat right there.
Absolutely. And we have to bring our psychological and emotional evolution forward at the same time. Otherwise, I'm not going to dwell on politics or anything, but right now with Donald Trump as president and all of the furor that's going on, this is not against Donald Trump. I think that he's cracking open the shadow side that we haven't been wanting to see for a very long time. But he's also holding up a mirror going, look how well the ego does not work if it's uninformed about itself.
Well, but basically Donald Trump is breaking open the, the fortress that the powers that be have created to keep things the way they were, which is, basically not that healthy.
Absolutely.
And David Wilcox recently compared Donald Trump to a battering ram, because that's
that
what it's going to take to bring down the castle that the powers that be have built. I mean, if it is really true that since Eisenhower, we've had a secret space program with bases on Mars, bases on the moon, a space station outside of Jupiter, and, David is very involved in this information,
yes,
then it will take somebody like Donald Trump that can survive multiple assassination attempts, which I believe he's already survived, in order to bring us into disclosure. And yes, I agree with you. We don't need to agree with everybody's politics, but I do think that he is the battering ram that's going to bring the powers that be down. Donald Trump said the other day, and this is very important, the planes did not bring the towers down and explosives were involved.
Uh-huh.
I just want you to think about how brave it is to make a statement like that in
Absolutely.
The world we live in.
And how important it is.
Yeah. There's a number of very famous, I know this because I treat some of these people in my practice, but very famous actors and actresses have been, their lives have been threatened. And Prince, by the way, did not die of an overdose. His bottles were switched because he was speaking out about chemtrails. And other very famous people who are speaking out about chemtrails are in danger of also being killed. So,
right.
I mean, I live in a little bit different world because of my surgical, you know, the people that I touch with my surgery.
Uh-huh.
And I can tell you that it's very, very good that Donald Trump is the battering ram right now. So, like I said, you may not agree with his politics. I'm not here to discuss politics, but
yeah.
I do think that we are in much better position because he is in the White House than maybe the alternative, which I believe mm-hmm. would be a continuation of the powers that be.
Oh, absolutely. Hillary would have been a continuation. Excuse me. And my point really is that not only might he prove a battering ram to a lot of the isolationism and secrecy that's been going down, but he's also,
right.
Let me take a drink of water here. He's also a splendid example of an ego that doesn't seem to be aware of anything other than its own structure. He hasn't expanded the bubble of the self to be inclusive. For example, like a Bernie Sanders. Bernie
mm-hmm.
Sanders when said, "Oh, well, you know, you just won this great victory over some legislation," and he just looked at the reporter and said, "I didn't win it. We won it."
Right.
Donald Trump wouldn't ever say anything like that. He would take credit and run with it. That's just his personality type, and that's
right.
where his ego's at right at the moment. So one of the things that I'm so excited about with him on the world stage and with contrasting figures like Bernie Sanders is we've got this amazing opportunity to wake up to who we are, how we've been
mm-hmm.
functioning, and to finally start getting a handle on, wow, you know, the limited, less evolved, the egocentric personality isn't quite the place we need to be in a nuclear age. We don't need, you know, volatile egos, no matter who they are or what nation they are in,
mm-hmm.
who are still coming from that old, unconscious baby program of I am physical and I am separate. Excuse me. Because that old programming of I am separate is what creates walls, weapons, and war.
Yeah.
Boy, I swallowed wrong. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, we're in a time now, though, that basically the majority of nuclear threats was neutralized a long time ago. Other than maybe a dirty bomb, which is difficult to control, just about any nuclear test that's been done in recent history, if you actually see what happened, there's a electronic failure, and the bombs don't go off. And this is no matter what country you're talking about. There was an article by one of the, it was in a Christian newspaper online, and it was an article written by one of the people in the military that was responsible for this testing. And he said for some time now, anytime we attempted to do an underground explosion, it just, nothing would happen. The electronics would be fried and there would be no explosion. So I think if you really investigate it, there are higher level things going on that do not allow nuclear weapons to be exploded, even for testing purposes.
Right, right.
So, and that's been going on a while. I think at least since 2000. So,
actually, longer than that. I can't remember. There's a wonderful gentleman from Australia who wrote a book on an energetic grid pattern that you can actually only explode nuclear devices at certain intersecting grid points on the planet. And it's just not
really
possible. Just so, yeah. God, I can't remember his name, unfortunately.
Yeah.
There's so, there's we so have, much more
we have a high
absolutely.
Level of spiritual protection. And I'm not, you know, I'm not saying that there aren't dangers with regular explosives and dirty bombs. And there's a big danger in Fukushima that is being ignored by the mainstream media that really is a big danger.
Absolutely.
And we've got a lot of cleaning up on the planet to do, which is why I'm so excited about some of the new technologies that hopefully will be, you know, revealed soon, including extraterrestrial help for cleaning up Fukushima. I think it's actually very important.
Right. Oh, it is. It's tremendously important. But for fear of sounding like a broken record, unless we match in our personal ego evolution the technology that we bring forth, then there will still be those many forces that will take the technology that can be used for great good and turn it into a weapon and for use of great harm, because, again, we have a large majority of humans on the planet at this point in time who still have not bridged into this more spiritual mindset of the transpersonal
right.
awakening. And therefore, mm-hmm. they're still very barricaded, and they are looking at the, I said it in the book, we have billions of people on this planet looking through the world through the eyes of a 12-month-old child, still deeply, unconsciously immersed in physicality and the awareness of being so separate that drives so much fear. And isolation and fear causes anger and finger-pointing, and when we're vulnerable, we strive to protect any way we can what we call ours, especially our human temple of the flesh and our family.
Let me tell you one of the questions that I ask each of these masters back in the 90s.
Yeah.
Each of them. Conversation, we get around to the ascension. And I would
mm-hmm.
say, well, how many people are going to make it through the ascension? And the master said anywhere between 2/3 and 2/5.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, from what the information we've gotten more recently, it may be around
20%. Mm-hmm.
And that is what's going to separate. I mean, the ascension is what separates. I mean, you can't destroy evil. I mean, you can't destroy
no.
evil. You just can't. It's not possible.
And it just springs from ignorance.
There
people
has to be, you know, there has to be a separation energetically, and that's what the ascension is.
You know,
so
Susan,
that's how it's going to come down. It'll come down through the ascension.
I used to know. So, you know, if you'd talked to me 15 years ago, I could have really talked with great assurance about a great many things, from the ascension
mm-hmm.
to my own reincarnation and the existence of the soul. And I have to say that in the last decade, much of what I thought I knew has been washed away and to be replaced by a great number of question marks. I'm just aware of the unification of all life, and I'm also aware of the danger of continued story. Our minds are incredibly powerful tools, and we create
mm-hmm.
we create universe within universe, story within story, rabbit hole within rabbit hole within rabbit hole, and then we lose
mm-hmm.
themselves down the story. And it's a lot of fun until we get tired of the stories and the rabbit holes, and we then want to just have something that makes sense, that isn't a sense from a human place, but sense because it's just the truth of life and
mm-hmm.
what source intelligence emanates and align with that. So if I seem a little bit hesitant here, and I always just kind of like dance around stories and go, well, that's very interesting, and I don't know. So
well, I don't think anybody who's in the third dimension can understand the ascension. I mean,
oh,
it's
no.
not possible from a third dimensional standpoint. So, you know, most of the people I've interviewed on the ascension, the information's coming from a higher level.
Mm-hmm.
So I would agree with you that if you're in the third dimension, understanding the ascension is particularly difficult, because it's like trying to understand something that is really outside of your perceptual reality.
Absolutely.
But irregardless, there are a number of interdimensional teachers that are quite, I guess, if you study many, many different ones, including what Jesus has to say about the ascension, it actually is quite cogent and makes a lot of sense. So instead of having, this is all I'm saying, instead of having to destroy evil, which is, you know, in the world of duality, it's the fight of good against evil. I mean, mm-hmm. watch any movie in Hollywood,
sure.
watch any, you know, read any book, bestseller book, it's good against evil. But you really can't destroy evil.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you can't do it. I mean, it, no matter what happens, evil comes back, the separated self that is into greed and into acquisition and into domination and power will always come back. So that's what I see happening is an essential change in, and I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't pretend that I know what it's going to look like. But if we're really going to reach the world where we have all of these amazing things that you know, are more in the realm of science fiction,
mm-hmm.
we're going to have to essentially change who we are.
Yeah.
That's why you wrote your book.
That's why I wrote the book.
That's right.
Absolutely.
But I do believe it's happening now. Jesus mm-hmm. has said it's happening now.
Jesus said that
he thought it was happening, you know, in his time, but he was wrong. You know, he says, no, it's happening now. So, and all the ascended masters are saying it's happening now, and the masters in the 90s said it's going to happen, you know, a little bit after 2000, you know, and we're there, you know. I think it is happening now.
So, it's funny to say it's happening now because, you know, there is no...
Now is all there is.
Now is all there is. There
That's
is no
right.
future. There is no past. There is only
That's
now.
Right.
And
the right.
end of creation is already over.
True.
The moment creation was set into motion, it was already over at the same moment.
But it's all very natural. It's all very easy. It's not difficult. There's nothing to fear. And it is unfolding in front of us right now.
Indeed.
That's the message.
That's the mystery. That is the great mystery. Is how that this can be unfolding, because it, at a certain place in awareness, it becomes very clear that duality is an utter illusion.
Exactly.
And that anything, and so hence we have this amazing mystery of multiplicity in oneness. And one of the, I'm so grateful to have a book that has illustrations in it, because I don't know if you remember the movie I Heart Huckabees. I pulled a section from that movie when Dustin Hoffman was playing existential detective Bernard Jaffe, and he was trying to explain the fabric of oneness and how we are all connected.
Mm-hmm.
And he just picks up this blanket and it says, imagine this is all of creation. Every dimension, every possibility, this is all of creation. Mm-hmm. And then he stuck one finger up underneath the blanket and went, well, this is me. And, well, and stuck another finger up in the blanket on the, you know, a couple feet away. This is you, and this is the Eiffel Tower, and this is the star Alpha Centauri, and this is Jesus, and this is whatever, and a mm-hmm. hamburger. And it's like, and then you're just looking at the blanket, and there's these different little peaks in the blanket that
right.
appear as different individual units and people and planets and star systems.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're all the blanket. And that was the best visual, which is the other reason I wrote the book, is I wanted to give people visuals. I wanted to give people tools and things that they could do to start moving into this connected mindset. This amazing transpersonal state of awareness where we begin to actually tap into and live from that connected place.
Right.
And then when we do that, then the fear goes away because, oh, my God, I realize that I'm not just me. I'm you, and that if I need something, that all of life is waiting to deliver
mm-hmm.
to my needs and the listeners' needs, because we are the all in all.
Right.
Wow.
And you know, you also realize that if you tap into your spiritual guidance and travel the path that is the easiest, which is the one right before you, and not wander off, you know, into the shadows, that everything you need is provided for you. I'll give you an example. I was guided to be in quarantine the last few weeks, and I'm sure it's because of the flu epidemic. You know, I treat patients from all over the world, so if I get the flu, and this particular one's pretty nasty, it lasts 2 weeks, then these people flying in would have no surgeon, which would be a real problem, you know?
Right.
So, and it really would be very expensive for everybody. But I've been guided not to leave. So guess what? All these people are bringing me food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, all of a sudden, I don't need to go out. I don't need to do anything. Everything's provided for me. I do have to realize that I'm in quarantine and I'm not supposed to go out. I mean, I got that in, you know, in my own guidance. But, you know, basically, if you can stay within your guidance, then anything you need will be brought to you. You need $1 million, it'll come. You may not understand how, but it will come.
Right. And the trick is aligning with, you know, the very words your guidance is back to, you know, the language of separation, because ultimately the greatest guidance of all is not me, Kate Montana, being guided by spirit, something outside of me, but me just being quiet enough and expansive enough and unhooked enough from Kate Montana and Kate Montana's worries and Kate Montana's issues and Kate Montana's past and her thoughts, and, you know, just loosen up all that stuff. And then that largesse can just sweep in that we call listening to guidance. But it's really us, but it's just us without the story attached that's filtering all of the information. It's like I had an amazing experience when I first started on this path with this book. Before it came out in January, I started talking at different churches and conferences, and I had almost forgotten that Kate Montana has some stage fright. Kate Montana has terrible stage fright, and I know it sounds peculiar to talk about myself in third person, but I actually do that quite a bit anymore. But and so I found myself about to go out on stage the very first time I talked about the E word and the ego and this whole conversation that you and I are having, and I just wanted to throw up. It was so awful. And my story, Kate Montana, had a reason to be frightened and have stage fright. And that's because I'd had three experiences in my life that made me realize stage fright was totally logical. At age 8, in my first piano recital, I blew it in front of, you know, a couple of hundred parents and other kids, which was mortifying. Then fast forward, and I was in the 8th grade at boarding school, and my headmaster, I was supposed to give a talk. I remember it was on Santo Domingo in front of the entire student body, and I got up, and I had memorized my talk, and I got up in front of the school, and I just blanked out. And so the headmaster let me hang for a horrible amount of time and then, you know, acidly said, thank you very much for the informative talk. You may sit down. So that was horrible experience number two. And then the third was I was in a musical and I forgot my lines. So I had three bad stage experiences. So that was Kate Montana's story, and I was sticking to it. And I'm about to go out on stage, and truly I was just looking for a trash can to throw up in. And all of a sudden I went, wait a minute. I wrote a book called The E Word. I know I am not Kate Montana. I know that is a story that is that is my past, all of my experiences, all of my languaging, all of my hopes and dreams and fears and experiences. That's just the Kate Montana show. That's the story. Mm-hmm. But underneath that, I am not that at all. I am this vast presence called nothing, called I am, that is I am.
Right.
And in that moment, and this is the importance of being able to get separate from the ego story, is in that moment of remembering, oh my God, I am not Kate Montana. That is a total illusion. I could let it go mm-hmm. from that pure non-storied place. And in that moment, I reformulated how I am, and I walked out on that stage with no stage fright. And I've never had a moment stage fright since. So what I've discovered, the importance of this work with the ego and understanding the story and getting beyond it into the transpersonal, is because, for example, so much of why personal manifestation doesn't work, or it's so difficult, or it's fragmented, or whatever, is because we're coming at it from personal manifestation, when it's the source intelligence, it's life itself, the larger mm-hmm. person, the larger self that we are, that actually is doing the manifesting. So we're trying to manifest from Kate Montana and Susan, and well, I can't speak for you, but I know for a long time I tried to manifest as if I was mm-hmm. doing it, because I was taught that my thoughts create, you know, reality and impact the quantum field, which they do. But there's so much more going on. And so this is why
I never really bought into that. I always figured that I was co-creating, and that what I had to do was pay attention to the signs on the path I was on,
yeah,
to make sure I was on the right path, and also to really understand, because limiting thoughts will limit you, okay? Mm-hmm. And we're all, the mind naturally produces limiting thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think recognition that a thought is limited when you have it is important, to release the thought and then to ask. And in meditation, I think meditation is extremely important.
Indeed.
To ask, what is it that I am co-creating with the whole?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it probably is the same for you. When you first wake up in the morning, you get just a download of all sorts of things
mm-hmm.
that are incredibly important for the day.
Indeed.
Things that sometimes make no sense until later on, warnings, things that you forgot, that if you don't remember are going to cause problems. And I think you just have to stay on the path. Stay on the path that you're on, and try to not have limiting thoughts, and to try to just be what you need to do, or be what you need to be that day, without too much concern about the future, and really not go into the past, because that's really a waste of energy.
Absolutely. And saying it and doing it are two different things. So the more, I think the more tools we have, Susan, to help remind us of who we really are, and
mm-hmm.
and these processes that we go through of letting go our limitations, our thoughts of limitation, it is very much attached to our sense of who we are and ourselves. And when we can expand mm-hmm. that sense of self, then we automatically start, then the limitations start automatically falling away from us, rather mm-hmm. than me trying to improve myself from my state of illusion of being Kate Montana. Well, I'm going to improve Kate Montana, but gee, Kate Montana is an illusion anyway. So rather than coming from the caterpillar trying to become vault into becoming the butterfly, I guess all I'm saying is that it really, really helps to be able to loosen up the boundaries and fall into that chrysalis stage where we just turn to mush and we're not attached to any story or any idea about how we are or who we are, and then reframe and recreate from that chrysalis place and come out as the butterfly and something much different.
Well, we're coming up on the end of the hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Oh, yeah. My website is www.katemontana.com, and that's Kate with a C. And the book is The E Word, Ego, Enlightenment, and Other Essentials. And it can be found in Barnes & Noble bookstores, on Amazon.com, you name it, just ask for it. And I'm also on Facebook and Instagram, Kate Montana.
Right. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a delightful interview.
Thank you, Susan. It's been wonderful being here. apparently on the other end of the country from you, but not really.
Not really. We're the same thing. It's one being interviewing the other part of her being. How's that?
There you go.
All righty. Well, thank you very much. Next week, we will be interviewing Claire Roy, the Circle of Initiates. And then the next week, Dr. Joe Espato, Prescriptions for Extreme Health. Thank you very much for joining us, Temple of Health Radio Show.